And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Welcome to Move the Sticks. I'm here with my man, Lance Erline. We are recapping day two of the draft. Lance, how you feeling?
Good. You put that work in today, Buck, didn't you?
Man, you have no
radio. Instant reactions.
You don't even have a clue. I have to tell you.
Come on, tell people what you. I want to know what your day. My day started at 7 a.m. on the radio show, 6:30 yesterday, and it ended at 4:25 a.m. when I finally finished my round two and round three mock. But it's a labor of love and all that. It's just hard to get through mocks. But I'm curious what your day, because I know of at least four. This is at least the fourth thing you've done today.
You have.
My guess is it's more.
5:30, did TV. 8 o'clock, TV. 9:45, digital stuff. Jacksonville. 12:30, press conference.
Wow.
Might even coach the football game in between all of that while doing it. So it's a. It was a lot. And I had to do all the recap of the picks on .com. So every pick that was coming in, I had to put out analysis while going. So if you can imagine doing that while coaching. So it's been a busy day. So it's been a lot. But let's talk about this draft, because it was a lot of cool stuff that took place. We'll react to some of the top picks, some of your favorite players, things that you like. The Houston Texans took a quarterback. There was a trade-up frenzy. We saw a bunch of surprises, winners, all of that. We'll cover it. And so first things first, because, look, man, you're all about H-Town. We have to figure out how to have this conversation about Davis Mills going to the Texans in the third round, pick 67. What exactly it means for the Texans and Deshaun Watson. But before we do that, let's hear what DJ had to say about it.
Everybody in the National Football League believes it's only a matter of time before Deshaun Watson is a former Houston Texan. So this, to me, is finding a quarterback that you like. Now, obviously, you're not going to get Deshaun Watson-level player here with Davis Mills, but there's a lot of ability, and we'll give him his due in just a moment here. But to me, it's all about a timing with everything that's going on from what's going on with Deshaun in a legal perspective. Once that is exhausted, there's not an expectation from anybody in the league that he's going to be back in Houston. Everybody assumes that's taking place. The Miami Dolphins collected a bunch of picks in next year's draft. A lot of people assume that was because they thought this might take some time and they would have the ammunition at that point in time to do something with Deshaun Watson. And I'm sure there's other teams lined up as well. But this is just another example of where this is all headed. I think we can all see it.
I can't spot any lies on that one, Bucky.
Yeah, I mean, I can't spot any lies, but I don't know if you take a third-round pick thinking you can replace Deshaun Watson. And I don't know if Davis Mills is that guy, because I'm not going to sit here and act like a player with 11 career starts in college is ready to be the heir apparent to Deshaun Watson. And I also will say this. You are down there, boots on the ground, with the situation in Houston. But we're still talking about a top-five player. We're still talking about a top-five quarterback who is – a franchise player who they paid a bunch of money to. And I don't know. Like, look, I know it's messy and all of that other stuff, but I've been around the league long enough to know that talent trumps a lot of different things. And so we'll see what it looks like and how it ends up. But I don't know if Davis Mills is the pick that is like, hey, okay, yeah, you know what? They're moving on from him. I think I need to see a little more before I'm absolutely convinced that, like, that's the move that the Texans are going to make.
Well, so – you know, first of all, Davis Mills, I actually, the player's fine. I don't have a problem with the player. I think he would have been great for Washington if Washington wanted to grab him, because that's a guy that you say, okay, this might be the guy. If you plug him into Houston, here's the difference. They have so many needs. It's one of the worst rosters in the league when you look at, you know, the long-term viability. They don't have core pieces. Their best players are on one-year deals, basically, other than Laremy Tunsil and Zach Cunningham. So this move, when you have cornerbacks on the board, you have defensive tackles on the board to help you against the run, when you have, you know, wide receivers on the board, and it just, this is a curious selection to me. I understand liking Davis Mills, but in this year where you have limited draft capital and then you trade up to get Nico Collins, a wide receiver, they clearly panicked after the Kyle Trask draft, followed by Kellen Mond, And after that was over, Bucky, it was a panic. And I think Nick Caserio would have loved to have traded back and add draft capital. But once those quarterbacks went, you know, I think he was in trouble. That tells me that Davis Mills was going to be his pick. He locked in on Davis Mills, or he would not have selected him here at this particular spot. And I just, you know, why would you draft a quarterback who you consider to be developmental? You mentioned it, 11 starts. Why would you do that when you could potentially find starters with another draft pick in the third round at cornerback, for example? Ifeatu Milifonwu is a guy that I liked a lot. Mm-hmm. I thought he would have been a great fit for the Texans. And, this one doesn't make sense. I can tell you here in Houston, though, people think not only has Deshaun decided he's playing his last game for the Texans, maybe the Texans have had a change of heart because the whole face of the franchise thing. Let's talk about that for 1 second. How do you go from he was the clear-cut face of the franchise. I mean, on all the commercials here, they're all gone. How do you come back from that when it's your face of the franchise guy? Can he come back into the fold? And would he be comfortable coming back into the fold?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a longer and more drawn-out conversation maybe right. for another time. But I will say this. We saw Ben Roethlisberger come back and reemerge as the face of the franchise in Pittsburgh. I think in time, most things can kind of be worked through. It'll be interesting. But I will say this. If you take Davis Mills in the third round and you do jettison Deshaun Watson this season and the offseason, you're going to go right back to the pond and fish again for another quarterback. So what is really the point when you have Tyrod Taylor there? I think that, to me, was the thing. If you know you're going to go back and have to fish in those waters, I don't know. I think you might have wasted a third-round pick. But you brought up something that really makes me think about why they did it, the knee-jerk reaction to other quarterbacks going. We saw 8 quarterbacks go in the first 3 rounds. That's the most ever. But Kyle Trask going to the Buccaneers at the bottom of the 2nd round, and then Kellen Mond going to the Vikings in the 3rd round. What are your thoughts on Kyle Trask first?
Well, as far as Kyle Trask, I think he's a good fit for the Bucs in terms of a developmental. Look, I have my doubts about him becoming a guy that you're going to win with at a high level for the Bucs. But there is a lot around him, and he does have some protection right now. Tristan Wirfs is there. So when you look at both Trask and Mond, we'll get to Mond in a second, I think the thing that stands out is there's some pieces in place on those teams. Christian Darrisaw was just drafted by the Minnesota Vikings, and there's a new left tackle for, you know, Kirk Cousins and maybe in the future Kellen Mond. So Trask to the Bucs, Bucky, I like it. I like the fact that he can throw the deep ball, throw it effectively, and you got Mike Evans, and you've got an entire list of wide receivers that I think do a good job going after the deep ball. So stylistically, I think it makes sense, and I think he's got a very good offensive coordinator over there to work with as well, not just Bruce Arians, but also Byron Leftwich. So I like it for Trask. I think it's a good spot for Trask. This gives him his best chance to succeed, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it is a good spot for Trask. And it's one of those situations where Kyle Trask needed a supporting cast that had everything to protect him, meaning a big offensive line that could protect him so he doesn't have to move around, big-time playmakers on the outside, which is similar to the playmakers that he had at the University of Florida. This is a great pick for him. Now, we'll get a chance to see because Tom Brady doesn't seem like he is willing to give up that role anytime soon. But for Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich, guys that have a soft spot for the big old school quarterbacks, we'll see if they can develop those guys and see if they can make Kyle Trask into a player. Kellen Mond in Minnesota, what's your initial thought?
So I like this because this is one of these, I call it a plausible deniability pick, Bucky. It's a third round, so you could say, it's just a backup. I mean, right, we're just getting a little bit more, you know, we want to have a good quality guy in there just in case something happens with Kirk. Don't worry about it, Kirk. It's just, I mean, it's third round. He can't possibly be a starter. But the reality is, I think this is a pick where you throw the bait in the water potentially at some point in camp and you start seeing what you have with them because you've got pass catchers. You got pass catchers, you got a great running game, and you got some protection. As I just mentioned, you just added a left tackle. I think it's a very interesting selection. Once again, Mond for me is not a guy who's going to be a plus starter in the NFL based on what I've seen from college. But I do think that the I think the Vikings would love to introduce some legitimate competition over there for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, and I don't know if Kellen Mond can do it this year. I think it may take some time
because
Kurt is going to be on that. But absolutely, I think at some point, man, you want better. You kind of reached your ceiling when it comes to Kirk Cousins. You're trying to play out the string. But if you can find a young quarterback that kind of comes out of maybe a surprising circumstance in the third round, yeah, maybe it works for them. One other thing that stood out in this draft, Lance, appeared to be a ton of trades, like just a trading frenzy, particularly in the second round. What do you make of it?
Well, everybody that you see there, Bucky, Denver moved up for Javonte Williams. He's a back that a lot of running back coaches I talked to thought was just as talented as Najee Harris or Travis Etienne, who are both first rounders. So that made a lot of sense for Denver because they consolidate the three running back approach that they had last year into one single one, and he's talented. The Patriots moving up for Barmore, of course, Alabama player to the Patriots, doesn't surprise you, but he's also the best defensive tackle in this draft. So, you know, the Bears moved up for a guy that has first round talent in Tevin Jenkins, and it was a big need for them. And a lot of us, probably you included, I don't know anybody who didn't at some point in time have Jenkins over at right tackle included. I think that was my last mock draft. I had Jenkins in the first round for the Bears, and instead they get him in the second round due to a trade up of 13 spots. And then the Dolphins, 50-42. You know, it's just smart. They know they wanted a tackle. They stuck with their guns and drafted the playmaker and Waddle. And they said, well, we've got enough draft capital that we're not going to panic. We can go get a tackle anytime we want in the second round. And that's what they did. They let the draft come to them. And when the time was right, they moved up 8 spots. And I think they got a solid right tackle.
No, I think they absolutely got a solid right tackle. I am really amazed at the aggressiveness that was displayed in the second round. This draft was as volatile as any draft that we've seen. We knew that there was going to be a lot of movement because no one really could get a sense of what other people had or how other people's draft boards looked.
Yeah.
And so that made it really, really dicey when it came to it because you didn't know who liked whom. And I think this draft with the trades kind of reflected that. Javonte Williams certainly was a big one. You talked about Barmore and Jenkins. Eichenberg going to Miami Dolphins, which was really a big pick because we thought that they would get down and have some other chances. And so it was a big thing. The Raiders made a trade in the second round to get Trevon Moehrig, who, you know, we kind of anticipated being a guy in the first round. One, what did you think about the Raiders being aggressive? Secondly, what do you think about Moehrig falling to the second round when most of us thought that he would come off the board somewhere in the first round?
Well, it really is tricky because I talked to teams who I didn't run into teams who were as crazy about him, to be honest with you. And I kind of liked him. I thought he was borderline first, somewhere between pick number, 28 to 37, 38, when I watched him on tape, that kind of guy. I didn't get the same kind of love when I talked to some different teams. So I actually, I didn't have him in my last mock. I didn't have a safety, but I was surprised he fell there. I thought Moehrig would be one of the first players off. I thought he'd be one of the first 8 players off the board. And for him to fall and keep falling, the Raiders, who have been extreme, well, they've got their own draft board, I'll say that. And with this one, though, they kind of went with a by-the-book move up the board from 48 to 43 to go get a player who, Bucky, he's got some ball skills, he's got instincts, and he can play over the slot as well. He's the best safety in the draft to me. And I think the Raiders, who have taken some very aggressive swings of the bat over the last 2 or 3 seasons, this is one of those smart doubles. I like this. I like it a lot going 48 to 43. Kind of a no-brainer when you think about it.
Yeah, he's a no-brainer because I think he's a better player in terms of how he plays the game than Jonathan Abram. And I know they have high hopes for Jonathan Abram being a guy that can get down in the box and get dirty and nasty and all that other stuff. Moehrig, to me, is a more natural, more instinctive player. So they get him in the second round. They can put him as the ornament on the top of the tree in that Gus Bradley defense and see if he can make some plays. It's interesting, but I think DJ also has some thoughts on that. So let's hear DJ weigh in on that.
I love this pick, Rich. So this is what's so great about the draft. They take my 62nd player at 17. They come back, get my 16th player at 43. Just shows you can have all different opinions on these players.
Yes.
But Trevon Moehrig is my top safety. He's a complete safety. He's outstanding with his angles to the alley. There's no panic whatsoever to his game. Sometimes when the ball goes up, you see guys freak out. This kid's very comfortable finding it and going after it. The range from the middle of field or from the deep half is outstanding. So Trayvon Morick, to me, a home run pick for the Las Vegas Raiders.
Look, man, he liked him, and I understand why, because there's a lot to like when you watch the tape. He's one of the more natural cover safeties that you will find. Can come down over the slot, can play the tight end. Really, really good in space when it comes to making tackles. And so the Raiders have one. And in that Gus Bradley system, I think he's the center fielder that they desperately need. But there was another corner, or not another corner, but another player that fell surprisingly. How about JOK, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah? The Browns scoop him up at 52. This is a guy that many of us thought he would be going in the teens.
Yeah, I'm interested. Let me hear what DJ had to say on him first, because I didn't get to hear that one, and I'm really curious what DJ said about him falling.
So this Jeremiah is pretty fired up about this Jeremiah nice. Right here. My 15th overall player. To me, speed, toughness, and instincts are what you want in a defensive player, and this kid is dripping in all three. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He probably played at 210, 212 pounds. But he can cover in the slot. Some teams think it's going to be a big nickel or a strong safety. Others view him as a will linebacker. Again, to me, this is a home run pick. All these general managers and head coaches are high-fiving after picks. This deserves a hug. This is a home run.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with him, Bucky, to be honest with you. I'm even higher on him than DJ was. I am 2, 4, 6. I got him as my 8th best player of the draft. Now, this is going to be interesting. I'm in a straight-up projection mode. I see the traits. I see the talent. I see the explosiveness. I see production. But he also really hasn't fully developed as a linebacker yet. And he is at 223 pounds, 222 pounds. He's going to have to learn to take on some blocks from time to time. Can he play closer to the line of scrimmage? They had him out over the kind of in a nickel roll almost, and out over split tight ends and receivers. So I get all that, but when it comes to running and hitting and tackling and aggression and physicality and being versatile, he's got all that. So move up the board here, another smart move. But to your point, with the medicals being the way they were, where you just didn't have time to recheck a lot of the medicals this year, and then maybe not as much league chatter going on as previously because you weren't on the road as much, I think you get some of the fact that maybe me and DJ, and maybe even you, I don't know where you had him ranked, but maybe the vastly different boards that everyone expected to happen simply happened. Everything we talked about, how, well, it's going to be a lot different this year. It's going to be a lot different this year. Yeah. And it proved to be.
Yeah, I think that kind of came to fruition. Without the ability to have what I call think tank or a group mindset where everyone gets together at the combine, to get together at pro days, and they begin to talk and, hey, what do you think about this guy and that guy and this and that, and everybody's report kind of bleeds into one another's. I think it did have an impact because the variances that we have seen in this draft are kind of crazy. I mean, we talk about guys that we certainly didn't imagine. Who's that? Nashawn Wright for the Dallas Cowboys?
I had him 7 PFA.
I mean, man, for him to be off the board already right now, I don't think anybody saw that. And there are people on the West Coast that didn't give him that kind of love. And so it's nuts, man, but beauty is always in the eye of the beholder. This year, because you didn't have maybe some of the corrective measures that would have been in there, your best friend, your homie telling you like, you look rich on that. You might want to go and recheck that. Or did you watch this tape?
But you're still talking on the phone, right?
You're still talking on the phone, but you know, you tend to let your guard down sometimes when you're together, when you're on the road, maybe you're having dinner, some beverages or whatever, loose lips sink ships, and all that stuff kind of happens. But you know, it's a different time, and there are some guys that went in this round maybe a little sooner than we thought, but at the end of the day, it's not where you picked, it's how you play. And so we'll see how these guys play when they get their opportunity to get on the field.
I thought there were some big surprises in this one, Bucky. I guess one of them was how quickly – I thought the cornerbacks were going to come off the board earlier than they did in the second and third round. I kept saying, wait a minute, where's the quarter? The cornerbacks are supposed to fly. They're supposed to fly off the board here. What's happening? What's happening? And as we got to the end of the draft, five of the last seven, we had that little quarterback run with Trask and Mond and then Mills. And then came at the back end of three, we had five cornerbacks going in the last seven picks. And it is funny how we may have different boards, Bucky, but everyone realizes, boy, once one position, once you start seeing them go, uh-oh, you got to all go.
So it's funny that you mentioned that, right? So I'm sitting here looking at a recap of today, and I see the run on tackles go, and that happened between 39 and 53. We saw Radins go, Cosme go, Jackson Carmen go, Walker Little went, Liam Eichenberg comes off the board, Tevin Jenkins, who started the run. And so you think about that. Then you go a little further. Then there's a little bit of a run on wide receivers. They kind of start coming off the board right when you get into the 70s. Josh Palmer comes off. Dyami Brown goes to the Washington football team at 82. You see Amari Rodgers goes to the Packers. Nico Collins goes at 89 to the Michigan. He goes 89 to Texans. The Houston Texans. Yeah. And then Anthony Schwartz from Auburn, the speedster, goes to Cleveland. And then you talked about the run at corners, and you're right. When those guys start peeling those tags off the board really quickly, that's when you have to make a decision. Hey, if we're going to get one, we better get them here, because if we go back around one more time, we may be picking the bones, picking the scraps.
Yep. You have to do what you got to do. I tell you, a guy who's still on the board that I was pretty shocked, I guess the highest rated guy that I still have on the board, or I stack my board, I'm not totally shocked about Amon-Ra St. Brown. I had him as a third, fourth, and then I talked to a team who said, you might want to move him up to 2-3. And this team likes him a lot, but they didn't draft him. But I'm going to keep an eye to see if they draft him sometime in the fourth round. But Michael Carter from Duke, from North Carolina, man, so much love for him. He's a good player. Every team loved him. Every running back coach loved him. And yet, because he's not 210 pounds and, you know, a three-down back, I guess he slid. But I would have wagered that he would have beaten Trey Sermon off the board. I thought he was for sure going to be the fourth running back off the board.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I thought he would have come off the board a little sooner. But you never know with the running backs. You know, like the running back market is always kind of funny, you know, like because there's so many of them. And I feel like this was a very deep draft and solid running backs. And because of that, I think that actually depressed their value. And so we'll see that run on running backs maybe go at the beginning of the fourth round.
Yeah, I'm looking at Ramondre Stevenson, Kenneth Gainwell, Khalil Herbert, Jamar Jefferson, Larry Roundtree, Jarrett Patterson, Elijah Mitchell, Chuba. Yeah, you're going to see. I don't know. I think based on the way the board looks, I think they're going to wait until the fifth round on running backs, and then you're going to see a ton of them go. And I had a personnel exec who, the way he looks at it, Bucky, I'm kind of curious if you look at it the same way, as he just said, look, is this somebody that we could get next year? Because if your answer is, oh, yeah, we could get somebody just like him in any year of the draft, then you don't really have to get too worked up about a running back.
No, and I think that's the deal. You know, like I think you have to be able to be nimble. You have to assess what it is, and we've seen year after year after year at that position being able to find guys in later rounds. And so some of these guys are sticking to that premise, and that has really impacted where running backs go off the board, because the guys used to come off the board early. Right now people are exhibiting a little more patience because, one, they know in a supply and demand business, a lot of supply of running backs in this 2021 class.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Anything else? Last thing. Anything else? Anything else that stood out to you from the first 2 days of the draft?
No, not too much. Not too much. I did think Ballard, I thought he was okay for the last 2 days of the draft. He went and got Quiddy Pay. Well, he let him come to him. He didn't trade up. And then he took the kid from Vanderbilt, who is really talented. I'm going to script the last name, but Odiyingbo. He has a lot of talent, but he tore his Achilles And basically, Ballard said, eh, that's okay. Even if we redshirt him, guys don't look like this very often on the hoof. So he got a couple of freak daddies in Quitty and Deo, and I think he's basically saying, all right, we're going to hit reset on that rush and see what happens.
So I really like that, because I think here's what I will say about Ballard. I know he's your guy, but he stays true to who the Colts are. And when you think about their defense on the Matt Eberflus, it is about hit, run, cover. It's about effort and work. And the guys that he drafted are those twitchy worker bees off the edge. And that, look, it matters for all positions. He has a profile for what he wants on defense, and they stick to that. After watching him conduct a handful of drafts, I automatically know guys that fit the Colts profile. It is very clear. He's very transparent when it comes to it. And he drafts according to that profile. And I think that's a testament to him, because he knows exactly what he wants. And he goes after it.
He's really, and you'll like this because you follow a lot of different, you know, he's a big fan of the Rockets and Daryl Morey when he lived here. And then even for, he's met with a lot of general managers in baseball, Theo Epstein. And he really finds process. That's what he buys into process. You got your process. You stay true to your process. You don't panic. And draft day is where it shows up. But he did admit, you know, he did admit to me the other day that in his first draft, he didn't do it right. He didn't handle it right. And I look at Nick Caserio. This guy's been in draft rooms for years and years. And I feel like in day one, he panicked today. He got Davis Mills. I didn't love that strategy. Then he trades up and gets Nico Collins. I'm okay with Nico Collins. Personally, I like Nico Collins. But then you traded up picks in a draft where you don't have draft capital and you're starting to give more picks away. So I feel like he's going to look back at this and say, man, this is – That was my first draft by myself, and I did some things I would have done better if I had a chance. Even Thomas Dimitroff told us yesterday on our wrap-up show, he said, man, even after all these years, you know, there's things you want back. You recognize how you either panic or you don't stay true to your process or you start reaching. And that's what the draft can be about. Who lets a draft come to them? I'd say the Miami Dolphins. And then who reaches? And I thought the Texans were one of those teams that reached a little bit. And frankly, I think the Raiders have reached a little bit.
Yeah, so it's funny you talk about Nick Caserio making those decisions. My buddies will always tell me, it's a difference in being the suggestion guy and being the decision maker. When you make suggestions, that's one thing. When you make decisions, it's another. And tonight, Nick Caserio learned about making decisions. You're right about the Miami Dolphins. You know who quietly has been knocking it out the park, in my estimation? The Detroit Lions have just been getting blue chip players.
I like what they did.
Yeah, like they're just quietly taking blue chip players, just kind of adding them to the mix. You notice that, you know, we laughed and giggled and kiki when Dan Campbell talked about biting kneecaps and being a physical team or whatever. But I would say that they are sticking to the script. I see Aleem McNeil, big physical player. We saw Levi Onwuzurike go to him. Penei Sewell has been a part of the squad. I don't think it's a coincidence that they are investing in the trenches, because you can already see what their DNA is going to be. They're going to be a beat-you-up squad. Like, I don't know if he can get it up, but they're going to try to be able to get it done. They also got Milifonwu at cornerback. And so you think about them, long, big, physical players. All of those guys have that toughness that you want. And so it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the Detroit Lions put it together on the field. But right now in the draft, it looks pretty good.
Well, you guys have you're going to wrap up the entire draft Monday, aren't you? That's a lot.
Yeah, we're going to do it all. But, you know, Lance, before we got there, we got the grade. We got one more day, one more night of recap shows. And then I think you're on the grade show Sunday with us, right? Yeah, we're doing that. So we'll take care of all of that. So we'll be back. Draft today, Saturday, after the draft night concert. That'll be on NFL.com, the NFL app, YouTube. We'll have the full recap show Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern. We also have full draft recaps on MTS Podcast that'll be out on Monday. We got the Move the Sticks 360 series, which will air on NFL.com Wednesday, May 5th at 6, 7, and 8 p.m. We'll talk about Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Justin Fields. And for more, you can always check out our videos on NFL.com and YouTube. MoveTheSticks.com/NFL podcast. So for Lance Zierlein, I'm Bucky Brooks, and that was the Move the Sticks podcast.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.